Today we're going to look at Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is it's a really good letter written by King Solomon. And during a summer course back in the day when I was in Bible college, I took a whole summer course just on the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes seems very negative, seems kind of meaningless. And as we go through this, it's not really, that's a wrong reading of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes at its core is that King Solomon pursues, because he's wealthy, pursues all the avenues of life. Wealth, fame, pleasure, all of these things, and at the end concludes that apart from God. He's tried everything, and when we look at our culture today and we see what's happening, this is a real good, and by the way, the Birds came out with a song, many of you that are my age, and maybe some of you younger ones may know it, "To Everything There's a Season, Turn, 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 the Birds." I was going to play that, but it was going to be a long service to start with. So anyway, the author is King Solomon. He's called the Koheleth, and which really means teacher of an assembly. So King Solomon is projecting on the nation of Israel these thoughts towards the end of his life, later in life. Sometime before Solomon died in 931 BC, recently there's been challenges to that theory, saying that the words used in the letter here were not readily available then. Some make that argument. I don't agree with it. The purpose to show the futility of life under heaven without God. And he really goes overboard saying, I pursued this, I pursued this, I pursued this. And he talks about the cycles of life a lot, that you go through these cycles. And a life without God, you're just going through cycles and it's meaningless, which he uses. He says, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. And translation, meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless apart from God. Now, as we look at these eight verses, you'll notice, first of all, they're in couplets. You have one, and then you have the other, and you have these spectrums that King Solomon is working through. So the first thing we want to look at is this. God arranges human events, and we start with seasons and time. For everything, there is a season and a time. It's the Hebrew word there, kol, for everything, means every kind of event. And he goes on and he outlines these events in 2-8. So he's saying, I'm going to give you a spectrum, and for every spectrum of life, there is a season and a time. Zaman is the word there for season, which means appointed time. One thing to keep in mind here, as we think about the seasons, we think up here, we got winter, we got spring, yes. We got summer, yes. Fall, not so much. Let me ask you a question. How many of you can alter these seasons? King Solomon is writing this with the understanding that there's nothing he can do to change seasons or time. They're outside of our sphere. The only way you could probably beat winter is go to Florida and spend, I don't know, your life there. When I was a kid growing up, but you can't change these times. They are fixed. And the word here, time is et. The duration and the beginning is really what that word means. And it means that there's a beginning and an ending. So Solomon sees within this life, and if you go back and read chapter, he says that the cycle, the days, the times, they continue. There's nothing we can do. There's some things in life that we cannot change. And Solomon puts it right up front here. Everything, there is a season and a time. Now to the purpose, for every matter under heaven. So Solomon's looking at this life compared to the life to come with God, for every matter under heaven. under heaven is actually life on earth that God created. Hefetz is the word for matter, and that means purpose or business. So if I read it this way, for every purpose under heaven. So within this cycle that we cannot change, that there's a time to start and a time to finish, and within this, King Solomon says that there is a purpose. God has a purpose. Many people in life, and particularly unsaved people, they think that these events that happen to them in their lives are just the roll of the cosmic dice, that it just happens, that these things come along and it's just chance, it's just random chance, and there is no method. It's outside, you know, it's just the way it is. Life comes and it happens. For believers, for us who have trusted in Christ, we know that God has a purpose for our lives. Romans 8:28, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Everything that happens to us in life, God already knows. And God has a purpose for what we are experiencing in that life, whether it's good or whether it's bad. Most of us want to live on the good side, right? We want everything sunshine and roses. I heard a pastor once say in a sermon, all sun and no rain makes a desert. So you have to have these two extremes in life. God has a plan. James Smith wrote in his commentary, the Koheleth, that is the teacher, Solomon, is affirming the divine providence arranges the moments when everything shall happen and assigns the duration of that event. So God says, on this day, this is going to happen, but it's going to continue until this ends. Now that sounds like Calvinism, but ultimately God has a purpose for your life. He wants to make you more like Jesus. And so these events come into our lives where they challenge us and they hopefully will change us and conform us and mold us into the image of Christ. His main purpose here is to confirm the conclusion he reached in the previous chapter, that wisdom, wealth, success, happiness, etc., are not in man's hands. One of the obvious questions is, does God have a plan for lost people? I think so. God definitely has a plan for us as believers. But God has a plan for lost people. And one of the plans that God has for lost people, and I'm talking about those who have never trusted in Christ, is that they come to saving faith in Christ. When I was 1979, 1981, I was in Germany. I was a private. And I remember going to do my laundry at the laundromat, and I was listening to Foreigner, Styx, all the ones of the day, many of you know. And there was this Christian couple in there. And they heard the music that I was playing, and I was playing it kind of loud, young and wild. And they said, have you ever heard Christian music? No. You know, when I got saved, I thought about that couple. I was lost. I didn't know Christ. Who do you think orchestrated that event in that Rose Barracks laundry place and put them in my path so that I might start thinking about God? And I remembered that they did tell me that Jesus loved me. And so these events in life, even in the lives of unbelievers, God says, I have a plan. God's plan is not for people to stay lost. God's plan is for people to be saved. And guess what? He'll use you guys and gals as you're out there on the highways and byways of life. He will use you in situations where you go, wow, that's just crazy. How did this get arranged? So yeah, I would say yes, God has a plan for lost people, and the purpose of his plan in that case is that they come to know Christ. When they get saved, then God has another plan, and the plan to use you in kingdom service. So Solomon sees here this purpose of God. There is a purpose. Now I'm going to go rather quickly through this these next few verses here, and hopefully you'll see where he's going with this. So God arranges human events through the cycles of life. You see this throughout Ecclesiastes, this cycle of life, and I thought it would be good to bring it in here. Okay, note these are in forms of couplets. And we start, first of all, with life and death. Those are two beginning and ending events. A time to be born, and actually the Hebrew word there means there's a time to give birth. And then, of course, there is a time to die. The beginning is the birth. Wonderful how God, and you know, even the birth is out of our hand. Now, God uses the man and the woman, but ultimately only God knows the day that that child is born. And we looked a couple of weeks ago where God wonderfully and fearfully made us in our mother's womb. I think it was on Mother's Day, last Sunday. There is a beginning time. You think about Emma and Lily here today. They started out from little... Somebody's got a phone call coming in. There's also a time for this. We don't like this part. But that's the ending part. And Solomon is saying, look, all of these things that happen in life, these are the extremes. This is where it begins and this is where it ends. In fact, God tells us that our days are numbered. Job 14, 5 through 7, a man's days are numbered. Psalm 90, 12, teach us to number our days. Listen, it's important that we take life to its fullest, that we use every opportunity between the time we are born and the time that we die and that we go to be with Jesus, that we number those days and we think about those days and we don't waste those days. Because sure as I'm standing here, someday I'm going to go be with Jesus. And that will include every one of us that is within the sound of my voice today. There's a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. Again, Solomon's taking the life and death and putting it into the realm of other areas where you can understand it. There's those seeds give life. And I got a couple of plants out here in my planter. I'm hoping to get romaine lettuce and some tomatoes. I'm hoping. It didn't work too well last year. But here we have the life. He plants the seed and that will grow. And from the germination of that seed, a plant will emerge, a new plant. But then there's also a time to pluck up what has been planted. We talk about the harvest. He goes on to say, a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to kill. And we do know that in the Old Testament, in particular when Solomon wrote this, there were wars. People were killed in wars. And we live in a world that will never experience total peace. There's always going to be some type of war going or atrocity, and there is a time to kill. It can also mean the execution of justice. It can also refer, Solomon could have been referring to animal sacrifices. But given the grand picture of the breadth of what he's writing here, it's, by the way, Vietnam, I know we have some Vietnam vets here. The way that we treated our veterans when they came home was despicable. They were over there fighting. And the way that our Vietnam vets got treated still makes me upset. They're over there. And I remember watching this unfold as a little kid, probably Grace's age, watching these bags being loaded onto helicopters and flown out. Yeah, there's a time to kill, but there's also a time to heal. Solomon writes, Rapha, which is really the restoration of health. So this is quite interesting. Microorganisms and bacteria, they have to be killed in order for the tissues to regenerate. So it's quite possible that we are talking here about a medical healing. In this case, people that get sick and they get better, it's a restoration of health. Now, this is still in the line of life and death, a time to break down and a time to build up. Verse 3. I don't know if y'all have ever seen this. It's amazing how they can bring buildings down now. And strategically, where nothing else around it, there's an art to it. And the building, when it counts to 1, 0, that building will just collapse. And nothing around it will actually be touched. Solomon's here is talking about demolition of a building. And then he says there's a time to build back up. There's a time to build. Jim Winter, in his commentary, he wrote this: as a builder, Solomon would have been aware of the necessity to tear down a dangerous and dilapidated building before rebuilding on the same site. By the way, Solomon built the first temple. There is a time for both kinds of action in the process of healing and construction. So, life and death, beginning, end, destruction, rebuilding. All of these things show the extremes of life under heaven. Secondly, we have sorrow and joy. So Solomon now turns, he says, okay, look, this is the season and this is the time that's set. You're not going to change it. And so you have to now go to the inward feelings of emotions and feelings. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. And the wedding last Saturday, Sweet Caroline, da, da, da. And that's going, wah, wah, wah. Yeah, that was a good day. There was dancing. And by the way, listen, Baptist, it's okay to dance. I know we kind of get stiff and you can't dance. You can dance. You know, Jesus performed the first miracle at a wedding. That's a marriage of a man and a woman and Christ to his church. Have fun. Have fun. Now, there is a time to weep, and there's also a time to mourn. None of us like that. I think of this young girl. Tough. That's tough. But then there's also the other side of the equation, laughter. A priest, a rabbi, and a monkey, they all go into a bar, right? Fun. Fun stuff. It's okay to laugh. It's okay to have fun. We have Christ in our hearts. Enjoy life. Have fun, but you can also be serious too. I think people need to at times lighten up a little bit. Dwayne Garrett said this: there is a progression of intensity from line A to B, which there is. Both sorrow and joy are part of life. Without one, the other is unrecognizable. How do you know what laughter is? Because you've experienced joy. Or you've experienced sorrow. How do you know what sorrow is? Because you've experienced laughter. That's how we know what season or time we are in our lives. You know that. You know that to be true. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, and there's a time to mourn and there's a time to dance. By the way, at one point, Audrey and I were in level two of ballroom dancing, and then I was pretty good, actually. I was surprised myself. We just didn't like dancing with other people, so it's kind of quit it. The next one, friendship and enemies. Friendship and enemies. There's a time to cast away stones, and there's a time to gather stones together. There are five, depending on which scholar you read, there are five different interpretations of this. But I think I got it narrowed down to the right one. It could have meant in the old days in Jewish practice, they would take stones and they would drop them in the grave. That's one interpretation. A second interpretation was that it referred to the building of a house. A third interpretation was a building of memorial. You remember the memorial stones in the Old Testament where they would put something, they would stack stones and it would be a memorial to what happened that at that spot. A fourth thing it can be is a destruction of a building, which he did talk about just a few minutes ago. You know what I think it refers to? Back in the day when you were at war with somebody, your troops would put stones in the field of your enemy so that they could not grow crops. And that is found in 2 Kings 3:19. Also, you shall attack every fortified city and every choice city, and shall cut down every good tree and stop every spring of water and ruin every good piece of land with stones. I may say this, the world does not like us. And it's getting worse. And we will have enemies. I think of the Kansas City, I was watching it this morning, the kicker from the Kansas City Chiefs gave a speech at a Catholic college and has come under intense persecution. I'm wondering what the NFL will do to him based on all the hate speech coming towards him. And all he did was share his faith. So there will be times we're going to have enemies. And there's not much we can really do about that. I was once told by an older pastor, if you want everybody to like you, get out of ministry. Because that's not going to happen. And I've had some in my churches before where, yeah, it's been brutal. And you're going to have that too. You're not going to please everybody, and everybody's not going to love you. We will have times like that. There's a time to embrace. This goes along with the friendship. There's a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. And this word embrace is savek. And what that means is to reach out and embrace somebody, to put your arms around them. So again, Solomon's talking about friendships and enemies. I was there. I was serving with the Marne Division when the wall between East and West Germany came down. Doing border work there, you could see, just crazy, all these East Germans flooding over. When I was doing border patrol in a town called Herle, which in German means hell, the town was actually called Hell. There was a statue of Satan in it, and I was with my first sergeant, and we were standing on the border, and we were looking across into East Germany. And my first sergeant said, "Sergeant Frazier, that is a fake town." And I go, "Really? There's activity." He said, "That is a fake town. Watch tonight." And he said, he gave me the binoculars, and I looked there again. He said, Look at the wall itself. What do you see?" Well, the bolts were on the outside. And I looked at Top and he goes, "That's because they don't want their people getting out. You would normally turn the bolt on the inside, but if they did that, people could break through that fence and swim across." Very very interesting stuff. And I know y'all remember this, Reagan and Gorbachev. Boy, I wish they were back. Gorbachev was instrumental in leading. Now Russia has a totalitarian dictator. By the way, so does the Ukraine. Enemies are real. We're always going to have them. Solomon says you can't change it. You can maybe heal it at times, but ultimately you will have an enemy. Now there's the next one. Hang with me. There's only two more to go. Receiving and giving. There's a time to seek and a time to lose. This is clearly, when you study the root words of these, is really financial. And then he goes on to say, it's time to keep and a time to cast away. This is all financial. We have a stock market here. Sometimes the stock market's up, sometimes the stock market's down. And if you're really good at playing both extremes, you can make a lot of money. But you can also, like 1929, lose everything. And there are people who have become millionaires one day and they're broke the next day because of the stock market going up and down, up and down. Again, James Smith writes this, the proper pursuit of wealth, there is a proper pursuit of wealth and there is a wise and prudent submission to its inevitable loss. That's the problem. A wise businessman knows when to pour additional resources into a concern and when to write that concern off. There's businesses that go, well, you know what, we're just going to write this off as a loss. And King Solomon's saying, enjoy your life. Have fun when you're in prosperity, but just know that there's a day coming when you may not be so prosperous. So enjoy this now. Laugh. Have fun. John Wesley wrote this, gain all you can, save all you can, and give all you can. In other words, it's transient. Life is transient. I'm not the same person I was 15 years ago. My body knows it. And my head shows it. There was a day I used to have hair, believe it or not. There's a time to keep and a time to cast away. Solomon, and by the way, Solomon was the richest person. He was also the most wise. So he knows. And Solomon says, look, I've pursued all this. And what's the end of the matter? The purpose of the matter is to obey God and keep his commandments. That's what Solomon writes in chapter 12. That is the big issue. There's also anger and wisdom. There's a time to tear and a time to sow. Now, some scholars look at this, I think they looked wrongly at it. It can be, they tear their clothes because they're mourning, and they sew it back up after the time of mourning is over. But actually, in the Old Testament, there was a time when people would tear their clothes because they were angry. Have you ever been so mad you want to rip something? I used to have a saying, spitting nails. Because you're so angry. There's a time to keep silent and a time to speak. So on one end you have anger. And on the other end you have the wisdom to know, don't do this now. Be careful how you act. There is a time to speak and there is a time not to speak. A fool gives vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. So there is a righteous anger. Jesus said there is a righteous anger, but we're also warned not to let the sun go down on our wrath. That means deal with it before you go to bed. And if you go to bed angry, you're not going to probably have a good night's sleep. Because I bet you all know, you toss and turn, horrible. So resolve it. Lastly, love and hate. You say, well, you're not supposed to hate. Well, Solomon's acknowledging that there are times when hate is going to be quite appropriate. A time to love and a time to hate. I would say this, love what is good. Love what is of God. Love what is righteous. Love the things of God. Love people as much as you can. As Paul writes, live at peace with people as much as it depends on you. Love people. Listen, the lost world needs to see Jesus. And we should be about love. But we cannot ignore sin. We cannot ignore the power of sin. And so we should hate the things of Satan. We should hate the things of evil. That's a fact. So Solomon says here, there's a time to hate and a time to love. And I put personal in here because Solomon is now concluding this section on there is a time and a season for everything under heaven. It's quite personal for Solomon. There is a time to love and love, 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 love people. Love your families. There's also a time to hate when we say we love the sinner, but we hate the sin. Y'all have heard it said before. We don't like sin. We don't want sin. And Solomon says there is a time to love and hate. There is also a time for war and a time for peace. Jim Winter said this in his commentary. It is important to note the preacher is not advocating or approving these things, but simply recording them as being grounded in human experience. The experience of war and peace is grounded in the emotions of love and hate. We have, in America, we have allies. And we also have enemies. When I was in the Army, we used to have flashcards, particularly Russian tanks. We would have to do those flashcards and identify whether it was friendly or foe. That was a real thing in the military. We took those cards and we did with aircraft, and you had to pass a certain amount. So when that day was coming where we had to test on it, I had all of our guys go through these cards and be able to get correctly within like 90% the right aircraft, the right tank, because if you shoot at the wrong tank and you hit your own friend, that's bad. By the way, if any of you served, I don't know, there was it's called the LAW, the Light Anti-Tank Weapon. That thing was crazily good. And you put it on your shoulder and you would press the button and it would go, and it would go right towards where you're aiming and it would hit it. I like that one the best. I'd say, hey, Top, give me the LAW. I want it. And you're hitting a tank out there. It's an old tank. It's not. There's nobody in it. But it's just nice to watch it hit and blow up. I don't know. Geopolitical. This is what Solomon says. And let me close with this. God arranges human events. Sometimes we don't like it. Sometimes we're not happy about it. But when that happens, please know this. God's got it. And we have to trust Him. And we have to say, okay, God, this is in my life for a reason. And I'm just going to trust you with it. And know that that's not going to last forever. Whatever bad thing it is, there is an ending point. The Christian life is one of getting ready to go into a trial, in a trial, or coming out of a trial. Get me out of it. But know this, everything has a specific time in which it will begin and which it will end. There's times in your life when you're going to love people. There's times when you're not going to love them. These are all part of the human experience that Solomon says, which is the circle of life. For everything, there is a season, and for every time and every purpose, there is a season.